Welcome to Mansplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner, and today we have two topics, because we figured that each topic is worth talking about, but neither topic is worth talking about for half an hour, 45 minutes. So rather than stretching it so thin you can see through it, we're going to tackle two separate topics today, and we'll plow our way through those momentarily. But first, let's meet our panel. Usually I feel like we need some kind of dating game music when I introduce the panel. It seems kind of quiet otherwise. It lacks majesty. But let's just pretend that you're hearing some Herb Alpert, the Tijuana Brass music playing underneath. Those of you who know what that is, it's very distinct. Joining us, of course, Paul Doroshenko. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Good to have you. Chris Hamilton.
Hey, what's going on, Stephen?
David Lisney.
Good afternoon to all.
And Byron Rutledge.
Howdy, howdy.
So, Byron, I have to ask, as usual, are you pulled over somewhere or are you at home?
I'm pulled over. I'm in Port Kells at the moment.
I don't even know where that is. Where is that?
Just outside
Langley.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Big
it's
town?
Right on the border. It's just an industrial district. It's actually Langley in Surrey. It's on the border there and kind of shares both.
Okay. It's amazing the technology we have today that you're sitting in a truck outside Langley and the signal from your voice is clearer than it was when we used to use landlines all the time.
I spend a lot of money on high quality Bluetooth.
as well you should, since you're driving all the time. All right, and today, in order to keep myself well lubricated, because I often get fairly dried out, that doesn't sound very good. My throat gets very dried out when I do too many podcasts in a row, so I'm lubricating with the Naughty Nick's ginger beer, which normally I do not like ginger beer. Normally ginger beer, I take a sip and it feels like it's taking my head off. But I like this stuff because it's got the ginger taste, but it doesn't assault my senses. So I will be keeping my dulcet tones lubricated with Naughty Nick's ginger beer. Anybody else like ginger beer or dislike ginger beer?
Oh, I like it.
Usually if you're gonna have Jamaican food, it's always good.
Yeah, the Jamaican stuff you like?
Yeah, so like it's always good if you have like jerk chicken or oxtail or anything like that. Ginger beer washes it down well.
Yeah, well, this stuff is. I always like the idea of ginger beer, but I would always try it. I'd be like, hey, I should try another ginger beer, and then it would take my head off in the first sip, and I would like not finish it. This stuff I'm finding myself kind of addicted to. It's a small brewery out of Burlington, Ontario, Nickelbrook Brewery, small place. That produces.
I just found it on the internet. So they've got a very nice looking bottle.
Oh yeah, the labeling on all their products is really good. Their root beer is top notch, but their ginger beer is a newly acquired taste. And normally I don't believe in acquired tastes because I think I have enough tastes that I like. I don't need to eat something that I don't like until I like it. But I'm enjoying this. All right. First topic today, it does tie into what Byron does for a living. It ties into driving. And the question is, or the point is, that women drivers are consistently rated as being more safe, being safer driver, which is, of course, contrary to what we'd hear all the time on shows in the 70s, 80s. I think it started growing out of it in the 90s. But you'd hear lady driver, the idea that women were not good drivers. But studies show women are safer drivers. So what's the problem with men? Why do we not drive safely? What motivates us to do unsafe, stupid things when we're driving enough so that it's statistically relevant that it shows we do this kind of thing? So let's go through the panel and let's start with Paul. Paul, what is wrong with men when they get behind the wheel?
You know, it's such a strange thing because if you look in at cars with couples in cars, 95% of the time the man is driving, right? My wife and I make the conscious decision to try and break that up so our kids don't think that we're fulfilling that same stereotype. But I don't know, guys really, really are into driving for the most part, not all men, obviously, and it can change over the course of your life. But they look at it as a point of pride. Like they are somehow, you know, super capable of controlling this vehicle. And I think that's one of the issues is it's pride in the thing that really like anybody can do, like getting excited. Years ago, I had a client who really, really wanted to be a race car driver. And he was no better driver than anybody else, I'm sure. You know, we're all pretty good, capable of controlling our cars well. And our, you know, the skill starts to deteriorate maybe when we're in our mid 30s or something like that. But so I think it's a partially a point of pride, pushing the envelope, and just that competitive, you know, that deep in our spine competitiveness that men have, physical competitiveness. And here it's sort of using a tool, and arrogance.
Okay.
We deserve to get into that lane.
We're the king of the road.
Yeah. It's a sort of expression of strength and power when you press the pedal down and it feels good. And I think we are often less likely to consider our failings and our physical failings and recognize the danger that lies ahead. Whereas, you know, maybe women are, you know, maybe it's sort of in their makeup, that they have to have historically throughout the generations, through the 200,000 years of humanity, had to catch the kids before the kid ran into the, you know, fell into the river, or, you know, whatever it was.
How far back are you going?
They've thought about it more. Well, I mean, a lot of stuff is part of instinct, right? There's learned behavior, and then there's things that seem to be just part of our makeup, and it's neither good nor bad. It just happens to be who we are. In some cases, it is bad.
Yeah. You know, that they've done research lately, archaeological rethinking, and discovered that societies really weren't stratified in the past, where women were the hunter or the gatherers and men were the hunters. They found lots of burial mounds where women were buried with full warrior honors. So I think we're going to find that some of that feeling that we have, that there's this intuition that women have to protect and to nurture, and men are the big hunters, I think we're going to find that was perhaps a belief that we'd like to have, but it looks like archaeology is going to disabuse us of that notion.
I don't think it will disabuse us 100% of the notion, but I think it will disabuse a lot of the stereotypes about that notion.
All right, let's move on. David Lisney, what is it about testosterone that mixes badly with gasoline?
You know, when I saw the topic, I've been thinking about it for a while, and I still think that there's bad drivers, both male and female. I think it's different. I think the safety, like the numeric safety, is because most of the bad women drivers, it's things that don't make a lot of sense and can lead to a crash. And then therefore, like, because it could lead to a crash, it could be considered more safe. And a lot of the habits of men that are unsafe drivers are much more likely to to cause a crash. Like, if you drive around Richmond, BC right now, even on a Sunday, pretty sure that there's going to be a fair number of not very capable female drivers, just saying, and plenty of male drivers too. However, like, from my own perspective of seeing around Alberta and the highways, yeah, tons of trucks going, you know, 120, 130, icy roads, passing on double solid yellow lines, thinking that they own the road and nearly killing everyone. I'm pretty confident, though I don't check every single windshield, pretty confident that's the guy driving it. So back to the numbers, I suppose, yeah, it just boiled back down to that aggression, that ownership, that control of a vehicle and control of road and sense of entitlement of, hey, I press down on this, engine goes burr, I go fast. Like, it's a habit that, I mean, the thing is, I'm also speaking from experience. The first vehicle I ever owned myself was a 1985 Toyota MR2. I think I got that thing up to like 140, 150 at 2 a.m. on a highway somewhere. And seeing as that was a few decades ago, I'm pretty sure the statute of limitation has run up by quite a bit. Point being, I've experienced that feeling. And as the years went on, I realized it's just not worth it. It's simply not worth it. And now I drive an 01 Ranger, exactly the speed limit at all times, because I've grown, I've realized that, you know, yeah, gas pedals are fun, but you're taking the responsibility of your life, other people's lives, other people's property, your property. It's just simply not worth it.
So you're no fun anymore.
Yeah, I'm just no fun. I do not need a radar detector. I'm ticking along exactly at 100 when the highway is exactly 100. And I've got like shiny new Ram 150, Ram 1500, just flooring it 130, angry that I'm going exactly the speed limit. And then they end up having to slow down around the corner when the RCMP are sitting there. I just don't get it, but that's their life. And all I have control over is how I live mine.
Now, just to clarify off the top, were you saying that you think that men and women equally have unsafe habits, but the unsafe habits that men have leads more often to accidents, whereas the unsafe habits that women have don't lead to accidents? That explains the disparity in the safety statistics?
Stereotypically, across the board, yes. Any of the poor women drivers that I've witnessed firsthand, it's usually absent-mindedness or not being observant. And again, there's bad men drivers, bad women drivers. Just my personal experience, my personal observation, bad men drivers are going to be aggressive and take chances and have a greater chance of getting in an accident. Women drivers, you're going to be irritated at them, but the probability of it actually turning into an accident for absent-mindedness, not paying attention to certain things, being distracted, things like that, is going to be lower.
It's an interesting theory.
It's the speed and aggression. The speed and aggression issue is what's different. I think women, like I see women run stop signs as often as men, you know, in Vancouver, but there isn't the speed and aggression aspect in the same way. You're less likely to have some to signal a lane change and have a woman try and close the gap so you can't get in.
Oh, I hate that.
For instance.
Oh, I hate that. Let's go to Chris Hamilton. Chris, what's your theory on all of this?
Well, I mean, as somebody who has a history of totaling vehicles as a result of his own bad driving, I can definitely concur that women are safer drivers than men, at least from a personal standpoint.
Or at least safer than you.
At least safer than me personally, yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, like I do a lot of walking, and if I notice somebody peeling out at a stop sign, or, you know, driving way too fast, or changing lanes, you know, in a sketchy manner or whatever, it's always a dude. And as they peel off into the distance, I can just hear the motor, to me, is symbolic of them saying, look how big my penis is. That's what it sounds like to me. So I think there's like a cockiness, peacocking factor to driving unsafely. You know, if you see a car that's all souped up with, like, you know, the engine that has had some work put into it, it's usually going to be a dude who's trying to like flex or whatever. And there is like a, you know, good hobbyist aspect to like being into cars, or, you know, working on your own cars or restoration projects or whatever it is. But yeah, it's usually dudes who are trying to flex like their egos with how good their car is or how fast it is. For the record, I drive a 2011 Ford Fusion, and have just wrapped up. It's a four cylinder, and I've just wrapped up a 16-year hiatus of not driving, after having been a terrible driver in my teens and early 20s. I've now got my license back just within the last month, and I'm back on the road in my 2011 Ford Fusion. That looks like something an old woman would drive, and I drive the speed limit too.
So you drive like an old woman in a car that looks like an old woman would be driving it.
Yeah, and I look like one too sometimes too, because I
what do you dress up like, Norman Bates' mother?
Totally, yeah. I sit all hunched forward, squinting to see the road. Actually, that's not true. I can see. I'm like a 20/20 sight guy. So, but yeah, it's nice to be back on the road, and I drive safely now. But I didn't always in the past, and that's kind of what it was for me, was just like a cockiness factor. I wanted to look cool, you know. I wanted to pass people. I didn't want to be in the slow lane because, you know, to me, life was in the fast lane. And so that's where I actually drove.
I think my mother drives a Fusion.
Awesome. I'm glad. We should, can I get together with her for coffee or something? Maybe she can drive.
I wouldn't do that to you. Okay. Now let's talk to somebody who drives for a living, who is on this panel the closest thing we've got to an expert on the differences in how men and women drive and how people drive. Byron Rutledge, who is is the term truck driver, is that derisive? Is that accurate? What is the correct or preferred term?
Well, truck driver is fine. Freight relocation specialist is also applicable.
Well, that one sounds like a little bit of bullshit, though.
It is. That's the whole point.
Okay. All right. So you've seen driving. You see driving all of the time. Does it bear out in your experience that men are less safe drivers than women? And if so, what are your observations?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, most people that drive four-wheeled vehicles are horrible drivers.
You mean not four-wheel drive, but four-wheel vehicles?
If you got four wheels, you're probably a bad driver. When it's women doing something that I see as like horrible driving, it's like the other panelists have said, it's, you know, inattentive, just regular old mistakes. When it's a guy doing something stupid, if it's an aggressive driver passing on where they shouldn't, going stupidly fast, 99 times out of 100, it's a guy behind the wheel.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I think that most guys, until they're in their 50s or 60s, think they're 20 and want to impress everybody. It's just that it's like was said before. It's, hey, look at me. I have a huge penis because I can drive like an idiot and not kill people, even though they think they know what they're doing, but they don't.
Okay. And
the bigger the truck, the smaller the penis. That's how it goes.
Well,
especially if they have two sleds in the back and you're going over and you're going over Rogers Pass and they're passing on a blind corner because they just didn't want to take a day off of work.
So it seems to come down to this need for showing off, this peacocking, and the idea that driving recklessly but having control over this powerful vehicle is somehow very masculine. You know, I kind of liken it to the men who refuse to wear masks during COVID. They're kind of saying, I'm not afraid, like as if wearing a mask somehow indicates that they're fearful and that they're brave. They don't fear the risks. Nothing's going to hurt them. And I think some of the recklessness with driving is the same thing. It's this fearlessness and believing that it is masculine to show no fear and to do something that is completely against common sense, because while it may hurt other people or other people may have a problem with it, I don't, because I'm just that much of a man. And I see the root of the two being the same. It's just this notion that if you're a man, you can defy conventions and still remain safe. We're raised on male heroes who do that, who get into very dangerous situations and rather than running the hell the other way, jump feet first into it and come out the other end as a hero. It does feel like it's very much fueled by a notion, a aging notion of machismo, but it's still there. The thing that drives me crazy is when somebody passes you, and it always, if it doesn't happen when it's a woman, but when a guy passes you, always turns and looks right at you, and you turn and look at him too. And I don't understand it. Do you notice this happening, Paul?
Yeah, for sure. And it's a funny thing. And it's there's an old George Carlin bit. You know, the guy who passes you is a maniac, and the guy who's in front of you is an idiot. And this turning to look thing is like looking to see if that guy, you know, that idiot who is in front of you is actually an idiot. So it's and you turn to look at the maniac.
Yeah, well, it comes across as, you want to go? You want to go?
Yeah.
Like, there's just this sense of dominance. You know what I'm talking about, David?
Yep. No, exactly. And it's been said before, the bigger the truck, the smaller the male appendage. And like I said, I drive an 01 Ranger. It's about the smallest truck that you can find.
But do you find yourself
Are you trying to say something, David? I mean, are you trying to?
I'm just personally attacked here. I'm just putting it out there. I mean, like, I don't want to say.
Oh, I see. You drive us. I understand that the size of the truck is in inverse proportion to the size of one's member, and you drive a small truck. Therefore, we're to believe that you have a large member.
It's statistics.
I don't think anyone's ever. No one's ever gathered statistics on that. I think that that's just.
We haven't even met David, and you're attacking me like this.
This is when we need Hafiz to call this out.
Yeah.
Call out the bullshit.
All right. But David, do you find yourself either turning and looking at somebody you pass or turning and looking while someone's passing you?
I used to. That's the thing. Like,
why?
That's their life. Like, I do everything I can in order to be safe, and I do everything I can in order to decrease the probability of my actions and my attitude from affecting those that I care about. That's all I can do. Yeah, in my youth, I'd be the one blowing by people. I'd be the one glaring them down. I was the one that was feeling superior because I'm able in order to press on a gas pedal.
So what was it? Was the feeling like you were like you were rubbing in your triumph by?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I would take it down a gear. I mean, the MR2 had a red line of like 7250. The thing would just roar. This tiny little sports car just roaring past whatever I felt like. I felt like the king of the world. And looking back, it was dumb. They're like, the probability of me being in a high enough speed and affecting someone else's life was relatively small because it was a small vehicle. It like barely made it over 2 tons. But me being injured, me still like pedestrians, two tons will definitely kill a pedestrian going 20 kilometers an hour, really. Like, I was taking unnecessary risks. And for what? And for what? For a couple of moments of feeling superior, even though really, what did I accomplish? What did I do?
I'm curious now, at this point in life with everybody here, do you respond or react when somebody does something to you on the road that's dangerous? If somebody cuts you off in a way that's dangerous, or, you know, makes a turn without stopping at a stop sign and ends up, you know, nearly colliding with you, do you respond in any way? Do you, I mean, you might get angry, but is there any response?
No, can't. I mean, for one, I would be responding like every 10 minutes of every drive that I ever took. But like, all I can do is just think to myself, buddy, it's not worth it. And you're just not that important. If you think you need in order to get there, what, 2-3 minutes earlier, maybe. And the more power you put to those rear wheels, the more likely that you're going to lose control, the more likely that you're going to wreck your shiny little white truck, the more likely that you're going to kill someone, the more likely that all of these possibilities come into play. And all I can do is shake my head and make sure that I'm doing everything possible in order to keep myself safe.
But you respond with a head shake.
You respond with, yeah, you do respond with
a head shake.
What about you, Chris? Do you respond?
Absolutely not. I try to stay away from those drivers at whatever the cost. I mean, like I said, I've only been back on the road for about a month after a 15-year hiatus from driving.
Okay.
But no, when somebody like cuts me off or does something sketchy, I just try to stay away from them at whatever the cost. Is there a correlation between road rage and gender? Is it just like a male thing? Because I've never seen a female, at least to my recollection, who has exhibited any level of road rage on the road.
I don't know if there's any studies based on that. Usually when you hear especially when road rage was really big back in road rage was really bad in the 80s, especially in LA, people were shooting each other on the freeway because the freeways were always jammed. I don't remember ever hearing a story that involved an aggressor who was a female. I want to go over to Byron.
I've defended them.
I've
defended road rage cases, and I can think of about 8 in my career, and there was one that involved a male and a female, but the rest were all just male.
The rest were all male.
Studies have been done. That's the study right there.
Yeah, well, it's anecdotal, but it definitely does say something.
Well, it's just the ones that make it to the police, right?
Yeah. Byron, do you ever look at somebody as they pass you by, or do you pass someone by and look at them? And what reactions do you have to people who behave, you know, irresponsibly on the road?
I don't give any reaction because it devolves. People get mad at me on the road and they get in front of me and decide to brake check me. And I don't got time for that. So any time I can if they want to be stupid, I just do my best to let them get by and let them go down the road and be stupid. I can't risk other people's lives for that kind of shit.
I remember one time there was somebody who was clearly probably inebriated, but driving very, very unsafely. And I pursued that person down the highway while on the phone with the police, giving our locations as I continued to keep this person in sight. And I was halfway doing that. I wanted to stop because I realized, what the hell am I doing? I'm not a police officer. Why am I pursuing this person? I should be getting as far away as possible. But I wanted to make sure that the police were able to grab this person. I don't think they ever did, but because where are they going to actually catch somebody on a highway when they're coming in from a regular service road?
They catch them. I call them in. They catch them. And I've had lots of cases where civilians followed people.
Really?
I had one years ago where a tow truck driver was following my client. And my client was fleeing because of the tow truck driver. And the tow truck driver was on the witness stand. And I asked him, I asked him if he had a license to speed. And the judge turned to me and he said, Mr. Doroshenko, you know there's no such thing as a license to speed. And besides, if there was, I'd have one. Fair enough, Your Honor.
All right. So I guess we've come to the agreement here. The consensus is that male behavior behind the wheel is a vestige of an outdated idea of masculinity and of virility that you feel most strongly when you're young and foolish and still testing your limits. But as you get older, you no longer feel the need to prove yourself in that way. You no longer feel the need to prove that virility and masculinity. And so your more rational brain takes over. So I think that makes complete sense. I don't think that anybody disagrees with that. We're all on the same page. Let's move to another book. The discussion moves now to men and our health. There's stats that say we go to the gym more often as men, but we also drink too much and we don't go to the doctor until it's too late. Men just don't seem to want to take the time to go to doctors. I don't know if that's changing in a large way. I don't know if I'm speaking about a notion that has passed as far as its reality, but that does seem to be the impression people still carry, that men go to the doctor far later than women do for the same type of ailment. And often they go too late, and that men don't take care of themselves, that men drink, men eat too much red meat and don't have a decent diet. Are we getting better at addressing our health, do you think? First of all, do you guys think that this is true, or am I quoting something that was true but is no longer true? What do you think, Byron?
I think it's absolutely true. I don't think it's gotten, I think it might be starting to get better, but I mean myself, I just turned 37 and I'm just now, mostly because my wife berates me into going to the doctor and looking after myself better.
Do you feel foolish going to the doctor because your wife tells you to go to the doctor?
No, I don't feel foolish that she told me. It for me myself, it boils down to almost like I'm scared to find out something's wrong, because then I won't be, I don't know, I guess I won't be tough anymore. If I go to the doctor, it means I'm weak in some way.
That's interesting. Very honest of you, but that's an interesting understanding of yourself and your motivations. What about you, Paul?
I wait too long. I assume by the time I've got some manifest symptoms that I must have brain cancer, eye cancer, stomach cancer, and I don't go until my wife sees that I'm physically suffering, and then I go. I've had some concussions. I never followed through on all the treatment the way that I probably should have, because I have too many obligations and too much responsibility. I think I fall into the stereotype in many respects, and I view myself as a progressive guy who should be over that, but I don't want to be on the one hand, I don't want to be a hypochondriac. On the other hand, I neglect myself when it comes time for those things that probably really should be addressed. You know, I just had a colonoscopy, right?
Those are pleasant, aren't they?
Yeah, it's an awful thing, but you know, it's something you have to do. But my grandfather died from colon cancer, and I've had to have a few of them now. And it's only because my doctor pressured me, and then my wife pressured me that I started having them regularly every few years. I had stomach problems for years and never bothered to go. So because I thought, I'll just die. You know, my time's up. I've had a decent life, you know, I'm going to die eventually. You know, what's the difference if I die at 40, so you, 47 you, or 52, right?
So you rationalized death rather than going to see a doctor.
Well, I mean, you're going to die, and dying from cancer is also a natural death, right? I could see that my body's deteriorating with age. That's going to happen. I've watched my father is getting pretty weak. He's 82 now. His brain is still there, but he's suffering. And it's just a matter of time for all of us. And, I just, part of me thought, okay, well, maybe this is time for me to cash in my chips. I'm ashes to ashes.
This is fascinating to me that you were being fatalistic instead of just going to the doctor and seeing if it was serious. And if it was serious, if you could nip it in the bud, you were just fatalistic and accepting that, well, everybody dies and maybe some people die in horrible, painful ways. And maybe that's my fate.
Yeah, pretty much. And also, got lots of things to do, right? I got to take care of the kids. I got to run my business. I take care of my dad. I do all
none of which you can do if you're sick and dying.
Yeah, I know, but they'll work it out. Plus, there's an interesting thing, like kids whose fathers die when the children are still fairly young end up really succeeding in life. We had two premiers, our current premier and Gordon Campbell. Both of them lost their dads when they were young. So, maybe you're condemning your kids to mediocrity if you live a long life. I don't know.
I was not expecting this explanation, this rationalization. It's quite fascinating, Paul. Let's hear from Chris Hamilton. Chris, are you looking after your health more, or do you find yourself hesitant to go to doctors? Talk to me.
This runs parallel actually with the driving topic, because when I was younger, I was a reckless driver. And now that I've got my license back, I'm not. And so I am taking better care of myself these days, but in my 20s, that was not the case. I'm going to tell a gross story here. So I used to be an audio engineer. I'm certified to do such things, but I don't really dabble in it as much as I used to. But my whole occupation weighed on the response of my ears, right? Like my ears needed to be in tip-top shape there. And there was this one week where I could feel this zit growing in my ear canal, right? And instead of going to do something about it, I left it for, a week and a half. And it got to the point where it wasn't just like a zit, it was like a full cyst. And you could feel it below my earlobe, kind of in like where my jaw connects, lower jaw to the upper jaw. And you could feel it there. And you could also feel it like if you put your finger, if I was to put my finger into my ear canal. So it was like a marble and a half size cyst in my ear canal.
Well, you were right. This is gross so far.
It's disgusting. Yeah. And so instead of having nip this in the bud when it started to sprout up there, I left it way too long. It was, a marble and a half size ordeal. And then when I went into the doctor, I just knew, like, there was one morning when I woke up and I just knew that I had to go get this dealt with, right? It was so painful. I could barely hear. And so I went in and she just looked at it and she grimaced. The doctor who is going to lance this cyst off and drain it, she grimaced like it was even gross for her. And
that's lovely when you go in, when your doctor looks at you like something's disgusting. They've seen everything under the sun and they look at you like you're disgusting. That's a real encouragement to go to the doctor earlier next time.
I certainly registered her grimace for sure and thought, wow, this is going to be unpleasant. And so she lanced off the top and she just squeezed, and that was how she did it. And yeah, it was just the most painful, like blinding pain. She drained it out. I thanked her and that was it. And then I had to actually go in and get the scab removed about a week later because that was blocking things up too and wasn't, it healed up properly, but there was like this big, you know, scab inside of my ear. And yeah, I kind of decided at that point that I was going to take care of my health. I also had an experience where I was traveling. I was going traveling in Southeast Asia.
Is this going to be gross too? Because I think I can only handle one gross story.
This one's not as gross. No, it's just stupid. And so I didn't get my travel vaccinations. And what do you know? I got incredibly sick. It ruined the second week of my vacation. And I came back and had to get on antibiotics immediately. And so the next time I was going traveling, I actually got my vaccinations. But yeah, nowadays I just go in, I get myself checked out immediately. I actually had a blockage in my ear the other day. It didn't get out of hand. I went the day after it started and nothing resulted from it. And yeah, I'm not gonna be that guy who's too tough to go to the doctor anymore.
Let me ask you, why did you not go to the doctor? What was the reasoning you had behind ignoring something that was clearly a problem?
I don't know. I don't know what it was. It's just like,
You said you were tough. Did you feel that you were toughing it out? Or did you feel like you'd be a wimp if you went to the doctor? What do you think was behind your hesitation?
Thinking about it now, I think it's more so a fear of it having been something more serious. Like, I think Paul took that angle as well. I don't know. Like, I didn't want to go in and find out that it was like a, you know, malignant tumor or anything like that. I just
because
wanted
not
to, like,
knowing would make it not malignant.
Yeah, like I've had zits before, you know, it will go away, just lying to myself. And it's like, I've had zits in my ear before that they just pop and it's not a problem or whatever. But yeah, I think it's just the fear of finding out that it's something horrifying. But when it came down to it, it wasn't anything horrifying until I left it too long. So yeah, nowadays I take care of myself.
And then you kept it, left it too long, and you shared it and horrified us with the story.
Oh, it was disgusting, man.
Yeah, okay, like, let's not go into any further about that. Okay, let's not go any deeper into that. David, do you feel that it's a stereotype? So far, we're finding out it's not a stereotype that has faded with modernity, that men just don't want to go to doctors or wait too long to go to doctors. How do you feel that's true in your life or in people you know?
In my life, no. I've always been pretty healthy. And I've also been pretty consistent in identifying when intervention is necessary and when it's not. That being said, I went into the forest about a month and a half ago now in order to cut down some trees on the property in order to build a smoker. Point of the story is there's this itchy spot on my forearm that's been there for about that long. So far so good. Like, it's just itchy once in a while. I really should see the doctor, so maybe I'm not the best example. However, it's not getting worse, it's not getting better very quickly. Anyways, I'm usually pretty good, other than that example, of identifying something that's acute versus something that's chronic, something that, you know, just increase your fluids. If there's minor pain, then ibuprofen, acetaminophen, knowing basic over-the-counter in order to take care of the pain short-term. But also if it's a chronic condition, anything that lasts like 2 or 3 days, especially if there's any pain involved, it requires intervention of some sort. At the very least, it's going to need antibiotics if it's about 3 or 4 days in. Worst case, you're going to have to be hospitalized and have tests done, something more invasive. But that's myself. I definitely feel as though the stereotype is still strong that most guys just don't want to go to the doctor at all. And pretty confident in, especially with the anecdotes so far in this panel, that it's true until and unless you have something severe enough that you look back, it's like, you know what, maybe going to the doctor isn't so bad, or apparently death isn't so bad. But yeah, pretty sure the stereotype still stands.
Now, don't keep us in suspense. What's going on with the scratchy arm?
No, it's small. I'm just looking at it now. It's smaller than my pinky finger's nail. Like, it's really tiny. It has not grown. It's like itchy on the odd occasion. I have some cortisone. I add it once in a while. I'm just, it's like a half, well, okay, 10-minute drive into the smaller town in order to see a doctor. It'll figure itself out. It's fine. It's fine.
It'll thank you for being a perfect example of the stereotype.
Even with my, like, it doesn't itch nearly enough for me to be like, oh my God, I've got like spider eggs or something in there. Like, I'm just looking at it like, meh. It's an annoyance, and also, like, it will figure itself out.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you, how do you know how itchy it would be if you had spider eggs in there?
That's fair. And also, especially seeing it's been a month and a half, they would have hatched by now. I'm just saying, it's okay. It's okay. It's a very tiny inconvenience. If, I don't know, if it gets worse, like, that's the thing, especially for skin ailments, I am probably the worst. Like, early on in my relationship, Jen swears by the fact that one of the moles on my back got bigger. I'm like, that's been there since birth. Like, it has never changed. She's like, you should probably take a look at it, like, have someone take a look at it. I'm like, sure, no problem. So, of course, because you can't just go directly to a dermatologist, I go to my GP, they go, sure, here's a referral. I go, like, 3 weeks later, I go in. They're like, nah, that's fine. And I'm like, I told you, like, it doesn't itch, it doesn't change. But that's the thing, a majority, okay, this itchy spot, it's not even itchy right now, but majority of situations, I'm pretty good about knowing if it needs intervention or if it's so minor that, you know, it's not really worth it at this point.
Yeah, you know what? You remind me of somebody I knew. He's passed away now, but he went to the doctor. He was looking anemic, went to the doctor, and the doctor said, did a test and said that he was low on blood, that he had about half as much blood in his body as he should have. And he left the doctors and said, well, that they might think that that might be the amount of blood somebody else has, but I know this is all the blood I've ever had, and it's all the blood I need. Turns out he was wrong, and he needed more blood. So this notion that you somehow inherently know what's serious and what isn't, just because you've had a couple of circumstances where you were right. Don't get cocky, kid, as Han Solo said to Luke Skywalker.
Will do.
Byron?
Yes.
What are your feelings on this?
I think it's been covered pretty good. I'm kind of more concerned about when the spiders are going to start crawling out of David's arm.
It's probably, oh my goodness, I might have bumped it. It's negative 20 outside, okay? It could have been just kept, okay, whatever. I'll see the doctor later.
All right, finally. I wonder whether this also isn't tied into the notion of men being what they do, that their job is who they are. And the notion of taking time out of work is something which is anathema to men, because they're important. They have to be at work. Their work needs them. And if the work doesn't need them, then they don't feel needed. And therefore, if they're needed at work, they can't afford to take time out to go to a doctor over something that might be nothing. I wonder if it's tied in some ways to that. But I think we've had a certain cross-section of opinion here, all of which have shown that all of us at times have been foolish about not going to the doctor. I remember when I came back from Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal after doing performances there, and I was feeling a little under the weather, and I didn't feel like I needed to take care of it. I felt like it would go away. Well, long story short, it turned out to be turned into an ear infection, which turned into double pneumonia, and my whole body became toxic to the point where my brain was cooked from the fever, and my limbs were swollen up, and I was in a hospital for a week. And if I had just gone and gotten an antibiotic when it first kicked in, instead of pretending that it was not that big a deal and I needed to work, I would have spared a lot of people a lot of grief. So I've been foolish at times too. And I know that with me, it was because I needed to work. It seemed self-indulgent to take time off to go look into a health thing when work needed to get done and I needed to do it. So it's not an outdated stereotype. Turns out it's true. And we've all been guilty of it. So I hope that anybody who's listening, who hears some of themselves and what we've had to say and the foolish things we've done, go to the doctor and take care of yourself, change your diet. We didn't touch on diet very much, but maybe we will. Do you find that your diet is better now, Paul, than it used to be? And if so, why?
Now is a, you have to look over a time period, I think. Since I had my colonoscopy, I basically haven't eaten, which is 2 weeks. I've been eating very little. I have nothing in the day and then a light meal at night. I'm sort of keeping with that. Part of it is because I'd like to lose a little bit of weight. My diet, my diet has been pretty consistent over the course of my life. I've eaten a pretty healthy diet. I'm not stupid about it.
Okay. David, how about you? Is your diet good? Has it been bad at times? Do you monitor your diet? Do you keep, do you exercise? Do you look after yourself?
All the above. I've had a poor diet in my early 30s because of what was going on in my life. In my adolescence, definitely my diet was fine because my parents were excellent in general for making sure the right dietary requirements were there. We didn't eat fancy, but we definitely ate, and we definitely ate healthy. And for now, health and exercise, like I've got 17 acres in order to walk periodically, and I've got chickens to wrangle, and soon going to have a puppy again in order to wrangle too. So there's definitely plenty when it comes to exercise. And food-wise, yeah, I mean, I'm married to a chef, and like I eat well, but definitely have to constantly keep an eye on making sure that you're not just indulging in the tasty stuff and incorporating enough fruits and vegetables and diminishing as much sugar as possible, as consistently as possible, because yeah, I know my metabolism is not where it used to be in my 20s. I want in order to stick around for as long as possible, and diet is one of many things in order to make it happen.
Well, you know that using Paul's logic, if you don't stick around longer, then your dog may prosper better.
Yeah, no. yeah, no, I'm sticking around. My mother, she looked to be in her 40s, well into like maybe a year or two before she passed away, in her mid 60s. And I have a pretty similar affliction that I do not look anywhere close to what my actual age is.
Do they still card you?
They still, in March, I am going to be turning 40 and I still get carded. I kid you not. The mask mandate is not helping. And the only real white hair that I have is right at the very bottom of my sideburns. And I usually cut that pretty slim. Yeah, I still get carded on occasion. It's been over two decades of this crap. I mean, it's hard to take it. Like, maybe when I hit 45 or 50, I might take it as a compliment. But gee, dear God, you not see my ear hairs. I am old. I do not need to get carded. What the heck?
Yeah, but don't you love the look on their face when you give them their ID, your ID, and they look at it and look at you and look at it and look at you and can't believe that you're that age?
Yeah, I was like, ID, sir? Like, I suppose. Oh, you're older than me. Can I just go inside now?
It's the reverse fake ID. They figure you're getting an ID to show yourself as being younger.
They all say right. That. They say you're older than me. You say, yeah, I'm better looking too.
I got to remember that one. Done.
Yeah, write it down with your hand that's itchy. Okay, let's
works.
Chris Hamilton, I'm betting that you have improved your diet.
Oh yeah, definitely, for sure. I went through residential drug treatment last year, and before that, like, it wasn't uncommon for me to eat an entirely sugar-based meal. Nowadays I do eat lots of fresh veggies. I don't eat a lot of red meat, barely any at all. I will eat chicken, but yeah, lots of cauliflower, broccoli, spinach in every meal, lots of bananas, juice, skim milk instead of the 2% that I used to drink. So I've changed it quite a bit. And personally, just a personal decision, I don't consume alcohol at all, just on a personal level. I attend like NA and stuff like that. And so yeah, it's improved quite a bit. I used to eat like, lots of crap and There's still some crap in there, you know, I'll eat ramen noodles, but nowadays, instead of it being just ramen noodles, it's ramen noodles with cauliflower, broccoli, and spinach.
Oh, you're saying ramen noodles are crap. I still eat Mike and Ike.
Mike and Ike. Oh yeah.
The candy. It's ramen noodles is head and shoulders better than Mike and Ike.
Anything in moderation. I mean, I'm not going to frown upon people to having, you know, a chocolate bar or whatever. I do it too, but yeah, I got to moderate it for sure. I get, my diet can spin out of control too. I'm the type of guy that if I buy chips, I will eat the whole bag. So more often than not, I just don't buy them anymore.
See, that's self-control, and that's something you learn as you grow up, because you said your biology has changed, your metabolism has changed, and so that notion of being invulnerable, which I think all teenagers have, but I think boys manifest it in ridiculous ways, it tends to go away as you find that foods have an effect on you they never had on you before. What about you, Byron? Are you is it difficult to maintain a good diet when you're on the road as much as you are?
It's very hard. Crossing the border really limits what I can bring for food in the truck. I'm lucky that I have a fridge and a microwave in mine, so I do have a little bit more, but I don't have a freezer, so I'm pretty limited, and truck stops aren't exactly known as health food stores, so it makes it hard.
And do you exercise to try? I mean, also, you spend a lot of time on your butt driving. Do you find yourself doing exercise to try to balance it out?
I tell myself I'm going to, and then after I've had a 14-hour day, I kind of sit there and like, I'm going to bed now.
That seems like the best exercise after a 14-hour day. But I think men are, in general, are becoming much more conscious of eating properly, and that whole notion of consuming as much red meat as possible is fading away, and it's not fading away in the way that it makes men feel less masculine. You can be masculine now and still be very picky about what you eat. So I think that's certainly one of the past odes to machismo that has gradually faded away and morphed into, whereas before, taking care of your body and being concerned about your diet and your health were seen as kind of beta male activities. Now they're very alpha male as well. So maybe there's hope for us yet. I want to thank all of you for participating today and sharing your insights and your experiences. Chris Hamilton in Nanaimo, BC, that's where you are, right?
Yeah, Nanaimo, BC, where it's currently snowing a little bit, but my Ford Fusion has its all-season tires on it.
Excellent. Byron Rutledge, who is an hour outside Langley, BC, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Happy trails.
Oh, I'll try. It's raining here, so it won't be too bad.
All right. Paul Doroshenko, Vancouver, BC, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm just going to make my ramen noodles now that we're done done the podcast.
Well, I'm going to finish my ginger beer and have some Mike and Ike.
Put some cauliflower in that ramen there, Paul.
I'm going to put some cauliflower in my Mike and Ike.
I'm in the office. There'll be no cauliflower.
There'll be no cauliflower. All right. And of course, David Lisney, who is about an hour outside of Edmonton, Alberta. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's negative 20 here and both vehicles have a block heater. So I'm going to just keep on roughing it for today. And yeah, I'll go into the doctor on Monday.
Thanks all right. You'll have to keep us updated. And to all of you, I hope you learned something from our revelations today, the sharing that's gone on, maybe make you question some of your own behavior, some of your own thoughts, some of your own thinking, and some of your habits. And thank you very much for joining us here on Mensplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner, and we are on the Fun Network.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow.